I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. We'll talk about being spontaneous. The Philadelphia Orchestra was supposed to perform at Carnegie Hall's opening night concert last night, but it was canceled because of a stagehand strike. Instead, the orchestra performed a free concert here in Philadelphia at Verizon Hall under the baton of our guest, Yannick Nézet-Séguin, who begins his second year as music director. There was even a conducting competition last night before the concert in the lobby, and the winner was a 9-year-old. The orchestra has just released a new CD, Stravinsky's Tchaikovsky, under the Deutsche Grammophon label, featuring Igor Stravinsky's Rite of Spring and Pastoral, and three Johann Sebastian Bach organ works transcribed by the legendary conductor Leopold Stokowski. We invited Yannick, as he's known here in Philadelphia, to join us once again on Radio Times to talk about music and his career here in Philadelphia. Great to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Such a pleasure, Marty.
You know, I'm thinking so much of your life and the orchestra's life is planned months, perhaps years in advance. And here you had the opportunity, perhaps even the freedom, to throw together a concert, which is what you did last night.
Well, of course, it's all about turning a very unfortunate situation, of course, because to have opened the Carnegie Hall season, to have been invited to do this opening night gala was very prestigious for us. And we were looking forward, we were rehearsing. But then, as I said to the audience yesterday, what do you do on a night off? You know, better play music and be with our own audiences here and do this gift as a big thank you to the Philadelphians. And it's really, really a tribute to our musicians, to our staff, who have been able to turn that situation within about 6 hours. And our audiences responded. We had a full house. So it shows that Philadelphia Orchestra is a very unusual institution, because you're right, orchestral music is really, really normally so prepared and crafted, and you have to decide things. We actually have our calendar for the next 3 years.
Is that right?
Yeah, but to be able also to do the opposite is a credit to really the organization and how it can be relevant, really, on a day-to-day basis.
Well, I was intrigued that if you had done this concert last night at Carnegie Hall, you would have been performing with jazz bassist Esperanza Spalding. And I was absolutely intrigued about what you might have or maybe will do together.
Yeah, we had the opportunity of having one big rehearsal with her. And it was a dream. It was a dream. New arrangements, but she was so, just her persona and the way she's so musical, it was very easy to get the orchestra engaged with her. And at some point, I remember, you know, we had to finish the rehearsal, and she was so happy. She said, well, we've got our groove now. Everything's going. And it's a shame we have to cancel it now, but yeah, I think we owe each other to renew.
I think you do too.
I admire her so much, and this is what we do also. Our musicians in the orchestra, and that's something that we don't talk about very often, but not only are they, you know, among the best of their field on an international level, but many of the musicians have also another life of jazz musician, pop musician, rapper, world music. And to bring all of this and have the multi-faced, you know, musicians within the Philadelphia Orchestra is something that we need to do more. And people talk about crossover, but for me it's not about crossover. It's about getting together when you're at the top of your field. And Esperanza is at the top of her field, and we are at the top as well. So to put the bridge, you know, and bring us the two worlds together is something I will continue to do
sometime in the next three years. You can fit her into your schedule.
Oh, of course.
I'm wondering, since the orchestra is beginning its season, whether for you as conductor, as music director, whether it's like starting a sports season, you know, the beginning of the baseball season or a football season, where you have to mentally and physically get yourself in gear.
The comparison is very good, because the only difference is that we don't have, as an orchestra, as much downtime as maybe the sports people, because we do have a very, very full summer season. We have it in Philadelphia with the Mann Center, but we also have this historical residency in Saratoga, in the New York State, and also in Colorado, in Vail. So these residencies take up a lot of time, and that means that the musicians don't have so much time to rest. But when we come back, it's true that as the coach I am, as the music director,
you're like the coach?
Yes, I am setting the tone for what we're going to work on for the next year. And it's all about, of course, musically, a certain set of standards, what I want to focus on, that aspect of the sound or that aspect of the playing, and that goes with the repertoire that we chose. So I do feel this way. Now it's our second week in, and the excitement is really, really high, but also the work is has already started in terms of how can we make music even better and make it even more wonderful for the people in Philadelphia and abroad to hear.
Do you think of a repertoire, especially through a season, as a kind of a puzzle that the pieces sort of have to fit together somehow, but by the time the season is done?
It's a fascinating process to plan a season. And there's the same connectivity, I would say, is the key word. Within the program, how do the works fit together? And I want that every program have a reason to be put together. Then you have within the season that these are interconnected and that we can draw some lines between, some connections, you know, between the programs. But also, even more interesting is the arch over a few years. So we have, for example, this season, we start a complete Beethoven cycle of the nine symphonies across two seasons. So it's not only one season, but it's across two seasons. It's a very, I mean, this is pretty standard and basic in a way, because the nine symphonies are such a wonderful corpus of works. But it's also an indication that we want to do things over time. We did a series of Requiem, for example, Brahms, Mozart, Verdi. Now we have the Foray. So it's the fourth season that we have this little thread going on. And this is what interests me, I would say, the most, to have that over time our subscribers, like you, are able to go through a journey with us and have a fascinating visit of some aspects of our musical world.
Well, and what's also interesting is the orchestra has a brand new CD. It's a Deutsche Grammophon, Stravinsky Stokowski. It's The Rite of Spring, these Bach transcriptions by Stokowski. Was it because of Stravinsky's Rite of Spring 100-year anniversary? Was that the reason? And, of course, the role that Stokowski played as well, bringing
Absolutely.
That to America.
I mean, you just said it. It's we wanted to get back where we belong, which is on the top label of classical music in the world, Deutsche Grammophon. We needed also to send two messages. I think make it relevant musically of what we what's happening in the world. So the 100th anniversary of the Rite of Spring was a perfect opportunity. But also, what is our personality here? What do we have as a connection historically? Is that Stokowski with the Philadelphia Orchestra were the first ones in America to do the first American studio recording of it. Also, he was premiering with this orchestra the work as a ballet and as a concert performance on this side of the Atlantic. So this was very special. But most of all, I think people internationally are really eager to hear, okay, where is the Philadelphia Orchestra now? How does it sound? Does it still sound legendary? And the Bach-Stokowski transcriptions were the ideal vehicle for us to really have this calling card to say, yes, we still do sound really unusual and unique in the world.
Well, let me play a selection, an excerpt of The Augurs of Spring. This is Dances of the Young Girls from Igor Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. And this is the Philadelphia Orchestra conducted by our guest, Yannick Nézet-Séguin. Let's listen.
Thank you.
And that's an excerpt of the Augurs of Spring Dances of the Young Girls from Igor Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, performed by the Philadelphia Orchestra, conducted by our guest Yannick Nézet-Séguin. And I was reading in the liner notes to this new CD that you were, I don't know if late is exactly the right word, but you came to Stravinsky later, I guess, in your career. Would that be correct?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, of course. Thank you for, not implying that there's been many years behind me. But actually, as a conductor, I started so young that I realized that many of my fellow colleagues, younger conductors, are especially drawn to the music of Stravinsky or Bartok when they're younger. And it's typical, it's relatively normal, I would say, because it's very rhythmical music and also has this kind of intellectual challenge, which is really, really interesting for a young musician. And not that I wasn't interested, but mm-hmm. because of my background of choral music, more Baroque music, I always admired it, but from a distance, Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, instead of wanting to conduct this desperately. So I did all my Mahler and Bruckner and Strauss and Brahms and Beethoven. And eventually, yes, Rite of Spring. It came, I think, my very first time in Montreal conducting it was in 2009, I believe, or so. So that's relatively late, since I started conducting in 1999. So it was 10 years into my career. This music gets you somewhere in the body, which is unfulfilled by any other music. And I think it's so essential, and this is why it's still so popular and was so groundbreaking 100 years ago.
And I say, and we're almost up in a break here, as someone who has listened to it and enjoyed it in a concert hall, sometimes when you listen, you just feel like you want to go berserk.
Yeah, that's it. And that's what this music gives you. But I'm happy you're reacting this way to our recording, too.
Well, let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation. Again, Yannick Nézet-Séguin is our guest today in Radio Times. He's starting his second year as music director officially here in Philadelphia, music director of the Philadelphia Orchestra. The orchestra has a new CD, Stravinsky Stokowski. We're going to play more selections as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Germantown Friends School, committed to providing academic excellence and Quaker values for boys and girls, grades kindergarten through 12. Hosting an open house on Saturday, October 5th at 1 p.m. with an opportunity to meet faculty, learn about art, drama, music, and athletics programs, and tour the 7-acre historic urban campus, including the Green Wade Science Center. Germantown Friends School open house this Saturday, October 5th at 1 p.m. Information at germantownfriends.org.
Political cartoonist Tony Auth worked for the Philadelphia Inquirer for nearly four decades before joining WHYY's Newsworks.org. Now experience his work in his new home, WHYY, to stir, inform, and inflame. A thought-provoking exhibition of Tony Auth's work runs now through November 8th. The exhibition was organized by the James A. Michener Art Museum in Doylestown to stir, inform, and inflame. For hours and information, whyy.org/events. The Kimmel Center supports WHYY and presents Orquesta Buena Vista Social Club Wednesday, October 9th at the Merriam Theater. Seemingly emerging from nowhere in the mid-1990s, the Buena Vista Social Club established itself as an international ambassador for Cuban music, transcending musical styles, fads, and fashion. The group has reunited to tour as the 13-piece Orquesta Buena Vista Social Club, featuring several alumni of the original album and film. Tickets at KimmelCenter.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen. If you're just joining us, our guest is Yannick Nézet-Séguin. He will be conducting the Philadelphia Orchestra, performing Mahler's Fourth, and that's tomorrow night, Saturday night, and Sunday afternoon. Also on Tuesday, October 8th at 8 p.m., WHYY TV will air Savalish, the Philadelphia Orchestra tribute. It's a program profiling the Philadelphia Orchestra's former conductor, Wolfgang Savalish. It will feature our guest and also some of my interview with Savalish that I did at his home in in Germany. I do want to play another selection from this new Rite of Spring CD, and this is Game of Abduction. Let's listen to this. Game of Abduction from Igor Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. That's from the new Deutsche Grammophon recording, Stravinsky-Stokowski, the Rite of Spring Bach transcriptions, the Philadelphia Orchestra conducted by our guest Yannick Nézet-Séguin. It must be so exciting, but also so demanding to conduct the Rite of Spring.
Yes, it's a physical experience. I'm already apparently a physical conductor.
Yes, you are. I have watched you.
And therefore, this gets to another kind of level. Because we have to remember, this was a ballet. And it's also my priority when I conduct this to not to dance on it, but just to remember that it had to be danceable. Even if it was so groundbreaking and rhythmically complex, somehow the genius of that piece is to get to a certain area of our collective memory as a human race that actually gets back to the essential of what who we are and the impulse of dancing. So as a conductor, I have to convey that, and yet the writing for achieving this is so intellectually complex. So I have to... There's two parts, really. There's always the left brain and the right brain, you know, by making music and conducting. But in that case, both are solicited to a real, real extreme event. Even if it's only about 35 minutes long, it does feel somehow afterwards that I've been conducting for 2 hours.
A real workout that you get.
Yeah, certainly.
I'm also interested that this new CD, you don't hear people coughing as you often do with CDs these days of live concerts. This was done at Verizon Hall, but without an audience.
Yeah, this is also a great source of pride for me and for us at the orchestra, because up to the mid-1980s or late 80s, almost all of the recordings were made studio-wise, which is, you know, you get... A recording was a way of setting for eternity, you know, a snapshot of what we could do and what we could think as a performer. When there's an audience, of course, this is the essence of what we do, but there can be a little accidents here and there. There can be extraneous noise. And a studio is a... controlled environment where you can really achieve what you want. The danger of that nowadays is that you don't necessarily get the energy that is normal or more easier to reach when there's an audience. So it had to be both. And thanks to my experience, I did over 25 recordings now in my life. So I know what are the traps and the things to avoid in order to keep the Philadelphia Orchestra as electric, energetic as we would in concert, but within that now, let's say, perfect sound environment.
Did it, though, require you know, performing it, stopping and starting, running, listening to what you have. I mean, sort of running almost back and forth between the edit suite and the orchestra.
Yes, that's exactly it. It's you treat it by section,
right?
Like the section we just did, for example. Some it's dangerous to start and say, "Oh, let's do only two or three bars there." No, I always insisted that we would do all these full sections, which are not so long. It's a minute or two, mm-hmm. but at least we have the same kind of energy. And within the first half of the Rite of Spring, for example, because it's in two halves. We did also a few sections in a row because you have to have that kind of sense of growing and pacing that is about to explode. And if you get caught into too much micro detail and micromanaging it, it's dangerous that you think it's perfect and then you listen back and you think, oh, how boring is that?
Yeah.
And I think we avoided that quite successfully.
Because it is possible to edit forever. I mean, to tweak and edit sound forever.
Yes, it's possible. It's possible.
Probably not a good idea, though. Right?
It's not a good idea because at the end of the day, it's not necessarily for a very trained ear. I mean, you're right. It is limitless. You can take any note. I can sing you a note here, and it can be tweaked up or down and trimmed and faded out, faded in, lengthened, all of that. But in the end, the product becomes, it's like listening to a computer. There's something, and even for the untrained ear, people would say, yeah, it sounds okay, but there's mm-hmm. something missing, the human element. And recording the digital era allowed us to be so, to reach that kind of perfection. But what's the most beautiful is when that is that the human aspect comes through much more within that digital perfection.
Do you see this as a tribute album in a way? A tribute to Leopold Stokowski?
Yes, this definitely is. Because I've said it before, but and I will always say it. I think for me, one of the great honors to become the music director of this institution is to realize not only that we have a great tradition, because my predecessors were all wonderful and legendary conductors like Stokowski, but also that these people were groundbreaking each time. And this, for example, Stokowski was so interested, as was Karajan later on, by the way, on developing the sound techniques, how to capture the sound of an orchestra so well. And I went back to the recordings Stokowski made of this very piece, and it's amazing when you consider in the 30s, the 40s, the quality of the sound, even by today's standards, is because he was really... it was very important for him to help that develop. So for us, making a recording of that importance and that exposure in the world was important to pay tribute to our own way of doing things 50, 60, 70 years ago, and that we still carry the torch now.
And that's Yannick Nézet-Séguin, our guest today on Radio Times. He's the 8th music director of the Philadelphia Orchestra. He also directs a number of other orchestras as well. He's a very busy fellow. And joining us in this hour of Radio Times, talking about a new CD just put out by the orchestra, and it is titled Stravinsky Stokowski. And I do want to play one of Stokowski's transcriptions. This is Bach in a fugue in G minor. But I know this free bowing, and there's some words about that in the liner notes with this. This was something that he was really pretty obsessive about, and perhaps helps us explain that sound that we associate with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Yes, I mean, the string sound has been one of the very important staples of the Philadelphia Orchestra sound, the Philadelphia sound. It goes with the richness. It's many things other than the bowings, I have to say. It's a question of knowing how to really sustain the sound in every part of the bow. It's a very musical gesture that I'm summing up sometimes by generosity mm-hmm. of the involvement of every single player in the string section. But one of the keys to it was to encourage the free bowing, which means that everyone does it slightly differently than the neighbor, which makes that it sort of multiplies as an effect the the richness and the density of the sound. In this little fugue in G minor, what is unusual is that it starts so intimately and then grows and grows and grows, and by the end of it, we can hear that lush sound and generosity, which, yes, is very Philadelphian, and I'm so proud that this comes through on that recording.
Well, let's listen. This is a Bach's fugue in G minor. Of a Bach's fugue in G minor from the new Deutsche Grammophon recording, Stravinsky, Stokowski, The Rite of Spring, Bach transcriptions, the Philadelphia Orchestra conducted by our guest, Yannick Nézet-Séguin, transcription by former Philadelphia Orchestra conductor, Leopold Stokowski. What I love listening to that, especially with headphones on, is you can hear the musicians breathing.
Yes. I was just noticing this, actually, and here you go with the human aspect of it. You know, there's nothing like experiencing music in a concert hall. And the recording is a way of, it's many things. It's fixing things for posterity, you know, but it's also getting another perspective of sound. Let's say an ideal one, or maybe my perspective, the conductor's perspective, when you're in the middle of things. And this is, you know, because in a concert hall, even if when it's a great concert hall, you know, like we have here in Philadelphia, depending on where you're sitting, you do have more of one section or less of the other section. And it's also part of the joy of it. But it's good also to can say, yes, I imagine myself, I'm a conductor, and then I buy this recording. And it does complement, I think, the experience of the live rendering of an orchestra.
You're going to be conducting Mahler starting tomorrow.
Yes.
Mahler's fourth, and I'm wondering, just using that as an example, then how you prepare, if there's certain things that you do preparing for a concert.
It's a wonderful question, quite broad, because it depends also if I have conducted that piece before or not. So a typical Philadelphia Orchestra schedule is to have about three to four rehearsals prior to the program, which is not a lot. It's three or four rehearsals of 2 to 3 hours each. So getting together means only the tip of the iceberg.
Yes, indeed.
And the iceberg is every musician and the conductor preparing each for himself or herself. So when I arrived to Mahler 4, for example, I did record, speaking of recording, that piece with my Montreal Orchestre Métropolitain on Atma Classique years ago. It was my second recording in my life. I'm still very fond of it, but my conception has completely changed since, because that was 12 years ago or so.
And you're a different person, right?
I'm a different person. I've evolved. So the way I'm preparing now is to try always to get back to the score. So it takes hours and hours and hours to look at it again and find another key now that I've conducted other Mahler symphonies. Or the Strauss Oboe Concerto that we will do with our wonderful, we just heard him on the recording, Richard Woodhams, our wonderful principal oboe. This will be my first time conducting that piece. So then it's a different kind of preparation because I have to study it really from scratch. And so it varies, but the studying, very silent studying for the conductor, is even more lonely than any other musician, because a musician, it is a very personal thing, but they have an instrument. I don't have my instrument. I have to wait to have my instrument until they all come
the
in.
A bunch of them.
Exactly.
But you are a pianist.
Yes, I'm a pianist, but that's separate in a way that I'm not using piano to prepare and study for conducting. It's really, I always liked it, the real silence aspect. I might use the piano occasionally when it's a very new piece, like, for example, we are commissioning. There's a Philadelphia Commissions weekend that we're going to do in November. And for this, there's three new, brand new pieces that the orchestra has commissioned. So there's no reference. There's not even a recording. There's not even the fact that I could have heard these pieces before. So I might use for this a little bit of the piano, but it's very rare.
But are you humming to yourself? Are you just, you're hearing it in your head?
Yes.
All the pieces?
That's a skill we have to develop as a conductor, to hear everything in our head and imagine how it would sound and imagine how we would like it to sound. When I'm stepping on the podium in front of the musicians, the first rehearsal, this is the crucial moment where my vision in my head meets the reality. And when I know the musicians, I know how they sound, like the Philadelphia Orchestra, I can anticipate how it will sound. But sometimes it still surprises me. And then it's not only about making them sound like my head, which would be complicated, but too simple in a way. The most wonderful thing is that what is in my head, which is my vision, needs to listen. I need also to listen to what is their vision and their tradition and try to melt this into a wonderful complementarity or connection between this. And that's what makes a Beethoven symphony like we did last week, the Beethoven 9, which they've played countless times and I've conducted separately countless times, but now it's Yannick plus Philadelphia. It creates a special blend that is not to be reproduced anywhere else. And that's why we still perform those pieces centuries later.
And that's Yannick Nézet-Séguin, our guest today on Radio Times. We're going to take another short break, get back to our conversation. I do want to open the lines at 1-888-477-9499. We've been talking about the upcoming season, their brand new CD, and we will play some more music and talk more after this very short break. And again, that phone number, 1-888-477-WHYY. Call us. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, The Economist, covering news and ideas that interconnect the world to give readers a worldview. On newsstands, in bookstores, at economist.com, or on smartphones and tablets.
Hello, I'm Russell Kaufman, president of the Wistar Institute, a proud supporter of WHYY. For over 100 years, Wistar scientists have helped keep your families, friends, and employees healthy because of our research that guides the creation of early-stage drugs. We then work with the pharmaceutical industry for their final production. Our name may not be on these cancer drugs, but our fingerprints are all over them. To learn more about how Wistar keeps you healthy and our region economically strong, online at wistar.org.
Cutting off your nose to spite your face, that's the current government shutdown. Cutting off your whole head, that's the possible vote not to raise the debt ceiling.
The debt limit is not something that politicians should be playing with.
The truly unhealthy debate over health care just around the corner. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY Door-to-Door Organics, an online grocer that delivers food fresh from organic farmers and local producers to homes throughout the Philadelphia metro area and beyond. More about food that supports health, community, and the environment at DoorToDoorOrganics.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Yannick Nézet-Séguin. You can learn more about our guests if you tune in on Tuesday night, October 8th. TV 12 will be airing Savalisch, the Philadelphia Orchestra tribute. It's a profile of Wolfgang Savalisch, and it will feature our guest. And actually, some of my interview that I did with Savalisch at his home in Germany a couple of years ago. And we've been playing some selections from the orchestra's new CD, Stravinsky Staccato. And this is an excerpt of Igor Stravinsky's Pastoral, the transcription by Staccato. Let's listen. Again, an excerpt of Igor Stravinsky's Pastoral, performed by the Philadelphia Orchestra and conducted by our guest, Yannick Nézet-Séguin. It's always interesting to watch people listen to their own recordings. I've done this many, many times. You don't give much away, but you're listening very intently.
Yeah, I love recordings. You know, when I was 12 years old and I started making some money when I was singing in churches and then eventually conducting some church service and so on, that was when I started to have pocket money. And pocket money was completely dedicated to buying recordings. And I became a real recording nut. You know, I have over 10,000 CDs at home in Montreal. And, you know, nowadays it's not the same thing. Now I get to make recordings. But for me, it's a labor of love, really. Yeah. And when it's something which represents the love affair that I have now with this orchestra, it's a great source of pride. I would say that when I heard that the musicians were happy with the recording, this was really maybe my biggest reward of all, that they would be happy. Reviews, it's one thing. It's not nearly as important for the conductor as to having orchestra satisfied with how they sound on it.
And is it important for an orchestra and a conductor to love each other? I mean, you know what I mean?
There's no other way of making music. There's degrees of love, of course. And
yes.
But you cannot make music really. Give your heart, soul, night after night, day after day, without having an appreciation of it and without feeling open. And to feel open emotionally, you need to be surrounded by positive feelings. And I know some people believe in creating intention. Well, good for them. I don't believe in it. I think it has to be that big circle, big family, or big friendship. And people sometimes say, oh yes, it's all about, yeah, you're now in your honeymoon stage. I don't believe in that. I mean, I'm very lucky to have this such a fantastic, humanly fantastic group of players here in Philadelphia. When I look at my 13-year-old relationship with my Montreal Orchestra, it's better and we love each other more than at the beginning. Mm. And my 5-year-old relationship in Rotterdam, for me, it's not because, oh, I'm so good because they love me. No, I'm not pretending this. I just think that it's important for me to create that environment to make music.
Well, I do want to get to our callers, but I have to say I've gone to enough concerts and you can see the times when the orchestra and the conductor do not get along. When they're mm-hmm. you as a member of the audience, yeah. you can hear it and you can see it. Some of it is body language, some of it is just the way that it sounds or how it looks almost coming off the stage.
It can be an interesting some of the things brought out by this kind of more tension can be interesting, but on the long period, or where we're talking about music director, which is like the father. One musician told me recently that he felt I was their grandfather of 38 years old. So, I mean, it has to be a different
something
thing.
New for you. I
yes,
guess.
Definitely.
Let me see what David from Yardley has to say. And David, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi
there.
Thanks for bringing me on.
Oh, sure.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how you got the sound for the recording. I'm asking because I've read that with newer recordings, what they often do is mic the different instruments and then change how the sound is in mixing mm-hmm. versus in the older recordings where they would just put a couple of mics in the hall and then you'd get to hear it how the audience heard it. What did you guys do?
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling in.
It's a very, very good question. It's also a very broad one because you are right in what you say, but within this, even older recordings, some of them were extremely mic'd. For example, for radio recordings, precisely, which Sokowski did a lot, and especially in America, it was also very fashionable to, even in the 60s, to mic in great detail all the sections of the orchestra to make sure to have a very immediate sound on air. There's also, and similarly these days, there's, for example, another record company from Sweden, BIS. I've done a few recordings with them, and they are not multi-miking too much, and they try to get the atmosphere from the hall. What we did for this one was to work first with our audiovisual head here at the Philadelphia Orchestra, so who knows the hall. He's called Charles Gagnon, and he collaborated with the Deutsche Grammophon engineers in order to get a blend of how it sounds in the empty hall, so to get the real personality of Verizon Hall, but still have the possibility of getting the sections the way we wanted. So we didn't tweak it too much. I've been in recordings where it was much more artificial, that we would do the balance, create it afterwards. But in this case, we took quite a lot of sound test, and once we got going, we got the sound you heard in the recording pretty much.
Thanks for the call, David. You can call as well, and that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We got an email from Andrea. I wanted to know about why there are not more women conductors. There are more than there used to be, but there's certainly more men than women.
Yes, we have one, actually, very, very exemplary, not far from here in Baltimore, the head of Marin Alsop, who has just conducted, you know, the last night of the proms in London, which is a really big deal. And she's a wonderful musician, and I think we're getting there. I think the reason might be explained only that orchestras, sadly, are, well, sadly, for the good, you know, orchestras are representing very much a certain way of holding the music and behaving from the past. And it's a very organized institution, which by definition, the beauty of it is that it gets us back to our distant past. But then they need also now, and we're making ourselves more relevant nowadays, but it's an institution in general that takes time to evolve. And so worldwide, it is behind in some social aspects, like with women. But when we think about the Philadelphia Orchestra, we had women in the orchestra much before many other orchestras in the world. So our ratio actually is very good, and I'm very proud of this. But I'm convinced that when you ask me the question in 5 or 10 years' time, there will be many more women conductors, and that will be, of course, absolutely great.
There are billboards of you around town. I'm sure you have seen them with, you know, Yannick in big letters. It doesn't say maestro. I mean, is that part of also
a different way, excuse me, less of a sort of top-down view of the orchestra?
Well, I think the maestro is still used sometimes when people from the orchestra, they want to address me during the rehearsal, they will use maestro, and backstage they will use Yannick. I think the maestro is something very beautiful because it is representing the past, but it's true that also I'm one musician among other equal musicians, and my responsibility is to get everyone together, but I'm not superior, I'm not above in that sense, and that can be translated in the way also big corporations are treating employees, you know, versus the head staff. And I think now what's important in the world is to get everyone at the right place that can bring the best, you know, of themselves to a certain organization. The most recent one to call me maestro was actually Esperanza Spalding.
Oh, is that right? Oh,
so in the rehearsal she said, maestro, and I said, well, please call me Yannick.
I think we talked about this before when you were last on the show, but of course, orchestras, classical music has to figure out how to fill halls, get a younger group of people in. I know that the Philadelphia Orchestra, among others, have worked really hard to do that. Do you feel like you're making some inroads?
Certainly. I have to say that, you know, there's many things about younger audiences. A core audience sometimes has more time, more availability once the family is set, once many things, goals in life also, and the professional life has been. So it's always been this way that some people of a more advanced age have more time to dedicate to the music. But it's crucial and so important that we get to give access to music to the younger generation, especially children, because this is what they will come back to when they understand what magic there is. And yes, there's a lot of big problems we have also in this city about, you know, the programs and the funding of the music schools, funding of music in general schools as well. So I think it's up now to the institutions like the Philadelphia Orchestra to keep doing what we do. I'm conducting some family concerts. We're doing more and more outreach also. And an event like last night when there's this free concert and we use Twitter and Facebook. The number of young people that were in the hall, it was amazing. And they have a great experience and they will come back this way. And I strongly believe that our art is far from dying. That, you know, if we keep believing like this, it will become, as we go in this day and age, even more special.
Let me get, looks like Nicholas from Princeton to join our conversation. And Nicholas, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
I just wondered in this area when the conductor is not quote unquote permanent, like in the times of Ormandy and Stokowski, I wonder if he finds it a difference or less good, or how does he feel about that, the fact that he's a conductor for more than one orchestra?
Interesting question, Nicholas. Thanks for the call.
Yes, thank you. I understand what you mean. I'm also music director of Rotterdam and Montreal. So for me, the way of considering this is that my experience in Europe and in Canada, and the fact that I'm still visiting now the other great orchestras in the world, like Berlin Philharmonic, Vienna Philharmonic, I am able to bring my experience there to Philadelphia. And the fact that I'm also a little bit less frequently present than my predecessors, Ormandy and Stokowski, for example, like you've said, allows for some key guest conductors in our seasons who come back and also nurture their connection with the orchestra and with our audiences. For example, Vladimir Yurovsky, Stéphane Deneuve, Raphael Frubeck de Burgos, Gianandrea Noseda. These are key names which have connected with our musicians immediately and also with the audiences. Therefore, they can have also not only their 1 week a season or something like this, but even more mini residencies where it's, I believe, fascinating and it's good for the baggage of the orchestra and of the conductors as well to trade that kind of information. I compare it to the globalization in a way of and the immediacy with the internet of the information. I think it's just enriching our musical life.
And we have about a minute before we have to say goodbye. I know you're now part of the mentor conducting program at the Curtis.
Yes.
Did you have mentors? as not, a conductor?
Not directly. You know, it's something that I find that Curtis' idea is wonderful, and that's why I accepted to do it. Two reasons. First, because I feel that the Philadelphia Orchestra and Curtis Institute have still this connection in history, which is so amazing. And my predecessors have been always very present at Curtis, so I wanted to honor that tradition and make it really actual. But also the other reason is that of all the conducting programs, it was something missing that new conductors could really, and I certainly missed it in a way for some years, that one conductor could talk to me about programming, about the life of the orchestra, about watching rehearsals, interacting with musicians, and this is what this program is about. And actually, as I'm about to go in half an hour, meet with my student, you know, Kensho Watanabe, who's so talented, so I'm excited about this, and this is part of who I am now.
Well, we're excited to have you back with us on Radio Times. Yannick Nézet-Séguin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure for us. And he's conducting Mahler's Fourth tomorrow night, Saturday night, and Sunday afternoon. We're going to close things out with Igor Stravinsky's The Very End, The Sacrificial Dance, and again, the Philadelphia Orchestra. Let's listen.